Log Talk Radio.
The dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed from the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone and you sit huddled around the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be? Tonight,
you are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind into the shadows of the Night Zone.
Good evening, everybody. Glad you could join us tonight in the Night Zone. This is, of course, a live event. I'm Colin Knight. You are in the Night Zone. Intended for open-minded audiences. All information provided by guests or speaker are the ideas or realities of that person or organization. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality and valued information, Night Zone or its operators do not accept any liability for guest opinions or statements made. And as a valued listener, we remind you always keep your mentor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, maison fort. Welcome to another edition of the Night Zone. I'm Colin Knight. Tonight, John Hogue returns.
John Hogue, a kindred spirit to the Night Zone. He is the author of 15 books with over 1 million in print in 17 languages, world authority on Nostradamus and prophetic traditions of the world. John released his predictions 2009 at the beginning of the year, and we shall have a look to see how his accuracy is. John Hogue, HogueProphecy.com. When we return.
Is a time of greater spontaneity. It's going to be a time where the era of the great faith-based religions of the Piscean Age will fade and be replaced by religions that are more scientific. Rather than to believe, the next 2,000 years is about knowing.
John Hogue, HogueProphecy.com, by KVMTO. Your host, Colin Knight.
And season's greetings to all of our listeners around the world. 3 days to Christmas in North America, Christmas 2009. It is Tuesday, December the 22nd, 24 hours into the winter solstice, and it is 14 degrees Celsius in Calgary with light snow. Returning in the shadows of the Night Zone tonight, John Hogue from HogueProphecy.com. John is back to self-score himself, if you will, on his 2009 predictions and provide some insight on 2010. John, welcome back to the Night Zone, sir.
It's great to be back, Colin.
John, before we get into tonight's lineup with the 2009 and 2010, how are you doing personally, sir? I understand you had a medical emergency with a family member recently.
Yes, my mother had congestive heart failure, and I had to put the robes of nurse on and add it to my seven-ring circus, and she is much better now.
I'm pleased to hear that.
I think what helps my mother recover from this is that she used to be an MGM dancer.
Okay.
And if you go to HogueProphecy.com, there's a picture I found off the internet, first time I ever found it, of a rare picture of one of the movies she did where she was in the Busby Berkeley Water Ballet,
right,
for the movie Neptune's Daughter, starring Esther Williams.
Holy cow.
And yeah, and it is a shot on a break of them all relaxing a bit and looking off towards the camera. It's a black and white shot. And it's the famous tableau shot, if anybody's seen the movie, of all the sparklers that going down in the water with Esther Williams in her scaly Neptune-esque swimsuit. And she's all around her draped all these nymphs, water nymphs, and they're all submerging down into the water with the sparklers. But they make it, they actually sank them. Actually, they were all... they made it reverse, so it looked like they were coming out of the water with the sparklers lit.
Right.
And it's a very famous shot that if any of you have seen it in That's Entertainment, my mother is the little goddess draped on the left of your picture at the feet of Esther Williams.
Well, now that you opened up that door, John, I wasn't going to mention it, but let's give it full mention. I mean, your father, he was a studio grip for the big industry. I mean, he worked with Orson Welles, and you know, this man is no slouch himself. You come from good stock in your parents. There's no doubt about that. I'm pleased that Mom is doing better. And I tell you, we will definitely put her into our prayer mantra, and wish good blessings upon you all for that. It is always difficult. It is always difficult.
It was difficult. It was fortunate. It was difficult in the one way, and then it was also a good test of a person like myself is looks at life as a challenge of being a meditator. My path in life since 1980, when I went to India, was to take initiation into a path of meditation. Under the tutelage of my teacher, Osho, who kind of gives me a different look at when things happen, the ups and downs of life. It's when there's been success or when there's failure, when there's tragedy or emergency. The question really is, how does one face these things? Does one face these things pulled out of one's center, fragmented, fearful? Or does one see all that process going on as well as helping the person in trouble?
Yeah.
And remain centered in something that just is not disturbed by all the disturbances of the body-mind as well as what's going on outside the body-mind. You know, there were tears, there was happiness, there was fear, there was all of that happening in me, but it was around me rather than me.
Yeah.
It's the slight shift in focus that if, as many of these prophets that I've studied over the years, if enough human beings made that slight shift in focus away from identity of these things rather than they are around us, like the weather,
mm-hmm.
and that our consciousness is some abiding eye in the storms of our lives, then it is that kind of idea that has been foreseen to be the birth of a new humanity. That's where it will come from.
I'm a firm believer in the universal energy, and I cannot imagine this universe existing without some form of divine energy. So, you know, John's mom will be in my daily blessings, and I'm sure they'll be in many other people's. And it is difficult, and you have to look at the loss in a physical human term, but you also have to celebrate that this person has moved on to a more spiritual realm, possibly.
I thought that in the last few weeks, last year or so, it felt like, and my mom is not just my mom, she's also a fellow traveler in the same disciplehood that I'm in meditation, and she is one of my closest friends. And she's almost 82 years old.
Bless her.
And so it was quite a process to deal with. A strange thing, it happened when my own master left his body in 1990. I seem to go through a process as I watch this particular body mind called John Hogue, a process where I go through my grieving before the event happens in waves. I'm sure a lot of you out there do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply watch this phenomenon, and it has been a tough few years with her kind of waning and preparing for her to go.
Right.
And then it just seems that actually there's a blessing in this situation, because now that the symptoms have come full force to cure, to sustaining and alleviating a lot of things, she's turned around, and she may actually have another 10 years.
Right.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Well, I'll be around in 10 years, but...
Well, I'm glad you are here on the second day of winter, because I've been watching your schedule, John, and with your TV projects and the writing of Predictions 2010, I do realize that we are biting into some very valuable time of yours, and I do appreciate it, sir.
Well, thank you. I always love being on your show, because we always magically end up talking about things that go beyond mere prophecy, but the things that are hidden behind,
exactly.
The stuff that's between the words,
yeah.
Which is really what's important.
It is. Do you know, one TV project that I did catch you on was on the History Channel, and it was called the Next Nostradamus. And
yeah.
I found that premise to be in my mind a little shaky, and I was so pleased when I saw you on the show trying to inject some fact to this science fiction idea of prophecy. I thought it was a little weak.
Well, it's interesting because there were a couple documentaries I was on at the end of 2008 that we did in the summer, and that was one of them. And last minute I was invited to come into that. And I think the title and what often happens with TV is the attempt to gain attention and sensation to bring people in to see things often sacrifices. I think Bueno de Mesquita, who was kind of implicated as the next Nostradamus, feels as embarrassed about and burdened by the title as anybody would. I talk about that experience at the opening of, in the preview of my book, Predictions for 2010, because I've studied his work, and even though I actually regard and admire his work as a futurologist, that is simply futurism or futurists who extrapolate from data they know, empirical data, they then make a soft science interpretation about where that will go. I mean, some of the best in futurology was Robert Strauss, who wrote The Fourth Turning, and New Millennials, who recently died in the beginning of 2008. I dedicated my predictions for 2008 to him because I highly regarded his work. I highly regard De Mesquita's work as well. It is unfortunate, though, that I've noticed in some of his writings and comments that he makes that he has that bias that all, even good scientists sometimes have, where once out of their own realm of empirical study, all discipline is dropped, and they make statements that are like barroom statements, without obviously knowing anything about the subject, as much as I respect him, I had to dig at him a little bit in the book about some of his statements concerning Nostradamus, which shows he's never actually read Nostradamus. And he's relying on third or fourth level information from biased sources, and has not used his scientific discipline to question, as a true skeptic does, all assumptions.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
I
do like him very much.
Yeah.
I'd love to meet him, and I think we would have a very interesting time looking at this subject of prophecy from two opposite doors.
Yeah.
I was brought into the show to be the subjective specialist. He was brought in to be the objective specialist.
Right. And the yin and the yang of the arguments, I guess. But as you said in your book, futurology isn't prophecy. And there is a major difference to the method claimed by both parties, I guess.
Well, and to De Mesquita's merit, he made it very clear that his work can only penetrate into extrapolating what's coming about 18 months into the future.
Yeah.
And that is valuable, and we may someday go farther. I'm in the Aquarian Age, scientific and empirical inquiry may find some very surprising, formerly subjective realms that it will be able to measure and understand, and prophecy may eventually be one of them. And if it is, it'll be because of some of the work that this man has done. But where it isn't prophecy, is I kind of use the metaphor that, you kind of run on a certain tank of gas that you call empirical extrapolation, and your car that goes down Destiny's Road will get you only so far because there are no gas stations on the road of future possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that are objective, that your evidence, like your gas, runs out the farther down the road of time you go,
yeah,
to where you run out of gas about 18 months down the road. And then you have these people like Nostradamus who just suddenly, name names, dates, things that happen hundreds of years
mm-hmm.
later.
Yeah.
They are certainly not doing it from extrapolation, although Nostradamus did try as best he could to use astrology to frame repetitions in history. He did use that as a structure, but as he kind of laboriously attempted, as I quoted that passage from one of his writings in the, I think it was in the Epistle or the Preface, that's where he tried to explain in his usual Nostradamian French, translated by me into these very long clausal sentences, clauses in sentences that are as long as three sentences, very common for 16th century French, it sounds like he procured his dark and murky visions from shadowy visions of what was coming from a continuum of sorts, from the divine spark, which implies that a certain reality of consciousness, all past, present, and future is happening simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the witnessing consciousness that somehow understands and interprets that. And I talked a little bit about a Satori experience I had at 21, where I didn't actually, and I can embellish it a little more on the show more than I said in the book, but I had an experience once at 21 where I started meditating, doing Zen breathing meditations, counting my breaths. And at one point one day, I got very tired, and it was in the afternoon, and I felt like I was as tired as death, and I was as heavy as stone, and I just collapsed on my bed, fully clothed, my tennis shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, I became aware of looking down at myself and going, I went to bed with my tennis shoes on. And as I was looking at myself, I was equally in my body laying my head against the pillow. Both were happening simultaneously. And then it kind of came to my awareness that, well, that's rather strange. That's impossible. I can't be in two places at once. And then I realized as I laid down into the body and then stood up again that I was out of the body. And at that point, I found my awareness floating up into the ceiling, looking down at me in the bed. And at that point, I heard what seemed like 1,000 distant waterfalls that were made up of thousands and infinite numbers of people talking.
Mm-hmm.
And as I became more immersed into this, I became aware that my consciousness was like a sphere, that every part of the surface of that consciousness could see simultaneously as it blew up like a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Larger and larger, the sphere grew. And equally as it grew, it also, the inside of the sphere, could see through all of its surfaces into the inside of the circle. Very strange experience.
Mm-hmm.
And as it expanded and expanded, whatever it touched, it became part of. And then there was a point where it seemed like I was watching an infinite number of actions happening, and any one of those actions I could dip into and live as we live in this time right now for a million years. Mm. And at the same time, it was just like the snap of a finger. I was back. Mm. And it was all happening at the same time.
A dimensional feeling.
Yeah. Perhaps a taste of the Akashic Records. I don't know.
Yeah.
Except that at a certain point, as this thing began to, I started feeling that I was going to get lost in all the infinite screens of things happening. It's a little bit like the scene between the architect and Neo in the Matrix, but far more vast than that. Wow. And there was no architect. There was just me watching it. And it was, at one point, the me was getting lost, and I started feeling afraid. And I tried to find that little, an infinite number of images, that one image of me sleeping on the bed. I found it, and then I was back there. And what I noticed was that I looked very pale, like I was, all the blood was draining from my hands, my feet.
Right.
Well, my shoes were on, but my face. And then I thought, I've got to get back in. Now, you know, a few years before that, I had been one of Robert Monroe's gateway experiment guinea pigs. You know, there were about 50,000 people across the country doing out-of-body research, trying to bring some scientific sense to something very metaphysical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of that, and it was a great breakthrough for me to study out-of-body experiences. So I learned some things from Robert Monroe of how you can get yourself back if you feel like you need to get back. You try to wiggle your toes. It's the toes you see down there as you're out of your body, and wiggle them and do some certain things, flutter the eyelids. But it was as if I was completely disconnected from what looked like my corpse.
Hmm.
And I was thinking, my God, I've somehow died. I've gone out of my body, and I've broken the connection. And at a certain point, I felt this complete, like, wow, I'm dead. I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this heaviness. My awareness, this ball of awareness became suddenly very gradually heavy, heavy, heavy. And I found that it sinking down as I kind of gave up on trying to get back. I mean, there was a point where I took my consciousness like a bicep and tried to strain it like a muscle to get back in. And when I finally realized that, well, I must be dead because I can't get back in, then the ball of awareness became very heavy. It sank through the floor of my room. I could see solids as solids as well as see them transparent at the same time. Very, very strange. As I got very, very small, this ball, until it was as if, as it rose up through the bed springs, I could see the nape of my neck coming. And it was as if the nape of my neck was the size of the earth. It was gigantic. I get very, very, very small. And then the moment that I touched, this awareness touched that, I immediately felt myself in the dimensions of my body being whipped like a wet rag from the nape of my neck. And when that happened, it felt like I'd broken my neck. And so I laid there in this cold body going, oh, my God, I have just paralyzed myself. And I'm in this body, and I can't even talk and or cry out for help. Very, very slowly, over the next 20 minutes, I began to feel my toes. And then slowly, slowly, slowly up my legs until... It went down the other way. It went from my neck. When I could feel my arms, I was so grateful that I still had my hands. At least I could still use my hands, even if I couldn't walk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, slowly, it went through my waist until it went right out my toes. And then I was able to get up and move around. I did what Monroe used to train people, and that is I then went back, rolled over into bed so that I could kind of go to sleep for a moment and really integrate myself back into the body fully, which I did. And then ever since that experience, I've never quite been in my body. You could say I have eyes in the back of my head, or they can at will be looking over me as well as in me. I'm not quite in my body.
Whatever you experienced has attuned you to do what you do, obviously.
Yes, and also an important point to your listeners, there are many things, many experiences you can have that are pretty phenomenal. But the important test to see if they are more than just the subconscious doing amazing stuff, because it can do amazing stuff, but a real spiritual experience, in my opinion and experience, is it when your life changes about over the next 6 to 9 months,
mm-hmm.
Then you know you've really had some glimpse of something of the vastness of the truth. And because in the following 6 to 9 months, I went to do summer stock in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, at the Highfield Theater, did a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan and a lot of other stuff.
Right.
And I dropped 80 pounds.
Wow.
Because I was a pretty hefty opera singer in those days. I dropped 80 pounds. I made a life course decision that year that where I left opera to pursue more spiritual understanding and also to pursue a deeper need to be a creator in solitude, a writer.
Right.
And so I guess that's because I have so many planets in the 12th house, Scorpio rising, Scorpio sun, all in the 12th house.
Mm-hmm.
So that, my life changed from that experience. And then that was really the beginning of my 21s when I really started meditating. And when I was 25 when I went to India.
Right.
And that's where the whole thing began for me.
Impressive. And obviously, as I say, we've checked over your 2009 predictions. And what really stood out in my mind was you made a prediction in 2009 regarding the weather that continued out of 2008. And you said it would continue to expand into 2009. And look where we are today with the Eastern Seaboard and now Iowa experiencing whiteouts. It's, you know, I'd say it's quite prophetic, but that was the idea, I believe.
Well, it's funny because the when I make these predictions, I'm finding more and more that the ones that I personally think cannot happen, like an African American becoming the next chairman of the Republican Party,
right?
Or unemployment by the end of 2009, when I saw it in 2008 going to 10.2%, 10.3%.
Yeah.
And a previous year before that, in 2007, looking at 2008, seeing a great recession at the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, my own bias is against seeing that kind of misfortune, because it's hard enough to make a living as a writer, let alone in a depressive economic situation. So it's definitely a calling. More than a moneymaker and a surviving thing. It's just like being a flutist, an artist, or any other thing. It can be difficult. And my own wiring egoistically is to hope that economic boom or bust does not come.
Right.
But I could see it coming, and I also saw that if we didn't, we'd be on probation economically for 2 years, and that if the systemic problems were not addressed by the world's leaders and governments and economies, that by 2010, by the end of 2010, we would be faced with another more catastrophically potential economic collapse that would be triggered over a sudden unexpected devaluation of the U.S. dollar.
Right.
Not that anybody wants that to happen. Neither China or anybody wants that to happen. The U.S. dollar, though it is no longer the preeminent currency, sole currency for reserves of the world, it is, as I predicted, going to be in a triumvirate between something China does eventually with the renminbi, or the, I still think I still pronounce that right, it's a hard one for me, or the euro.
Mm-hmm.
But like the English pound sterling, the American dollar is going to be around as an important currency. And certainly one would extrapolate that 5 years from now, when the Chinese plan to really divorce themselves from the debt, which I think they are definitely planning to do, and I foresee it will happen in 5 years. But still, you have these unexpected tilts that go on. And one of the things that nobody's preparing for is that a slight drop of the U.S. devaluation is going to cause a cascade. Something's going to happen with that. I think it'll be a huge shock that hopefully the good thing that will come out of it is that people will get very serious about changing the systemic problems. I mean, I said before Obama was president that during the time right after the election that many of his promises would not be fulfilled, that it would be a honeymoon that would be over by the end of 2009.
Yeah.
That he was not going to address the systemic problems of the banking industry. He was not going to actually do any reforming in 2009. His shovel-ready jobs will not do anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to be right about any of that, because as a sometimes house painter and ditch man and road worker myself, that's my bias would be to be employed.
True.
Of that shovel-ready
stuff. But when you look at the as you stated in the beginning of 2009, you saw an institutional collapse. You know, 140 banks this year have been taken over by the FDIC and either piecemealed off or held onto. And if that isn't a nationalization of the banking system, I don't know what is.
And I also said that there would be a nationalization of the auto industry, which where I tried to say one would hope he would be more like Cincinnatus when he took the burden of certain capital systems that were in trouble. Fortunately, so far, the Detroit industry has not been as serious, although all the signs, even with the cash for clunkers situation, showed that the cars that most people traded were not made in America. So there's, again, a systemic problem there that is not being addressed. The other thing that I found most shocking about the prediction I made for 2009 were that I nearly achieved 100% accuracy on weather predictions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them I would not think would happen. I saw next to no hurricane season in the Gulf states, and I saw if there was going to be any tropical storm events, they would be around South Carolina, North Carolina, and New York, and perhaps Florida. So it was going to be action, if there was any, was going to be in the Atlantic seaboard during this hurricane season. And that's pretty much what happened. There was one tropical storm in the Gulf, then another that in the season in November that crossed into the Florida Panhandle. So Florida was affected, went across Georgia, back into the Atlantic, did a lot of damage to North and South Carolina before it went up through the Gulf Stream and went out.
Right.
Now, before that was Hurricane Fred in August, which was the most powerful of the storms that could have hit. It sent very large waves into Long Island, and New York City was under a hurricane warning and watch.
Right.
That's a tropical event.
Yeah.
So I looked at that, and then I also looked at what I saw was going to be the kind of Hurricane Katrina season of the Western Pacific typhoon season. Unfortunately, happened with Typhoon Morakot devastating Taiwan.
Yeah.
And a few other major storms. And what I see for 2010, it's actually so important that I end the book on the significant appeasement of planet Earth that I foresaw. I signed off this new book, New Almanac for the New Year. I signed it off on All Souls Day. That means that I might have continued to edit the book, but the editing would be just to make my sentences better.
Mm-hmm.
The essence of what I predicted, I always copy and seal away,
right,
so that it has a record that, yes, indeed, I said that
mm-hmm.
at that time. So you look at the e-book, you'll see the copyright is kind of unique. I don't do a year, I do right. the day.
Exactly.
And
I did know that
came out.
I did notice the new book was written on All Saints Day. I thought that was quite prophetic.
Well, it was interesting because it wasn't a plan. It just sort of happened, the real date of Halloween, you know, not the 31st. And
right.
And And because All Souls Day is considered a time when in the circuit of the earth around the sun where we seem to, they believe, be more open to messages from beyond, from spirits from beyond, that's why they call it All Souls Day. It's interesting to end it there. I looked at that and I talked about, I said, look, Copenhagen, I keep calling it Kyoto because it's about as bad. The Copenhagen Treaty that was going at that time, which is happening now, closing up now, in Copenhagen in December, back in November 1st, around that time, I was saying, look, I'll tell you what they're going to do. And then I went on to say that they're going to do things that significantly do not bind countries to deal with this most serious danger before all life on the planet, the issue of climate going out of control.
Right.
I then called, in my final chapter of the book is called, We Have Appeasers for Our Time. And I got the feeling to send the message saying that the Copenhagen Treaty negotiators are the new Neville Chamberlains and Edouard Deladiers of our crisis time. And they are not appeasing Hitler. They're appeasing Mother Earth, who is going to declare war on the human parasite, or the humans behaving like parasites rather than gardeners and custodians of the planet. And you're going to see, and I went on a very scary trail of prophetic prophecies about how we're going to see a spike in temperatures in 2010, that hopefully the good side of this, and the violence of the weather that's going to come in 2010 and 2011, will really be the Pearl Harbor moment for the human race, where they've got to understand that the serious change must happen. Not talk, not dreams, not putting all of your hopes and changes onto a magic mirror called Barack Obama,
right,
who used that to get into power. I'm not saying that's wrong, but it's now a time for Mr. Obama to put down the Nobel Peace Prize in the mirror and start changing.
Roll up his sleeves and do something.
This book's subplot is really a lot about Barack Obama, because even though I think I will make a prediction, I didn't put it in the book, but I'll make the prediction now that Barack Obama will probably be the man of the year in 2010, for better or worse. Not that we have Bernanke right now for 2009,
right.
But the reason being that the book, it talks a lot about him. The year is really a lot about a situation that he's gotten himself in, which I have been writing about since 2007, early 2007, before he was even campaigning for primaries. I said that if this man becomes president, I see a great president in this man. I see almost like a Lincoln return. But this man must come to his destiny at the right time. If he comes in 2008, he will be coming to his destiny too soon. And that will make a very somewhat tragic, difficult first term.
Right.
He can survive that and learn from that. There is an opportunity for him to become a very great president in his second term. And now I will add even perhaps his third term. I say that because if he is successful, now this is not written in stone. I'm saying here's a timeline that if this timeline is successful, it's successful because he has turned around his immaturity and learned from his mistakes, just like Abraham Lincoln did. I think if you remember the first year Lincoln had in office in 1861, had far more disasters and far more missteps.
Mm-hmm.
And far more people frustrated about promises unkept than our President Obama can even imagine,
right.
Thank goodness for him. But yet we still, if you ask people in 1861 what they thought the future of Lincoln would be, they would not, I think, say he would be remembered fondly as one of the great American presidents.
No.
They would consider him an abject disaster. However, he did soldier on. He did learn from his mistakes, and he managed to keep the people with him, and he won the Civil War. And I think Barack Obama has a similar karmic storyline, only it's more focused on the economy and healthcare and global warming as the threat rather than the Confederate States of America breaking from the Union and slavery. There's certainly another slavery that's arising, which I also use a whole chapter to describe in the book, a new slavery, a new hypocrisy that America has so long legacy of us being this powerful beacon, this light of hope for the world, as saying all men are created equal, and the men saying it and writing in a Declaration of Independence, all of them slaves. This hypocrisy of that we're the only people that might have forged that idea first and made it work as a government, but we had slavery. Right. Many totalitarian regimes of the same period had abolished slavery as a crime against humanity. In a similar sense, here we are again in another loop of hypocrisy with health care. America is again behind the times. With, you know, we are the country that forged modern democracy into the world, but we are the only modern democracy that still has no universal health care as a right in the Constitution. In fact, we're the only country of modern advanced democracies that has their people go bankrupt over health problems.
Yeah, it is a little strange. It is a little strange. I tell you, John, let's do a quick station break here for our clients down the line. And when we come back, we shall look at 2010 through the eyes of John Hogue. Hang in there, everybody.
Is kind of the beginning of upheavals in the world rather than the end.
Is 2012 the year the cosmic clock finally winds down to 0 days, zero hope?
John Hogue, HogueProphecy.com. In the Night Zone.
2012 is kind of the beginning of upheavals in the world rather than the end.
Across the gulf of space, minds immeasurably superior to ours.
The question is all, what's there life throughout the universe? We're not alone in the universe. We don't know for sure.
Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? God put it there.
We're in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Your host, Colin Knight.
I have to tell you, John, that I've been scrambling all weekend to try and consume as much of your new book, Predictions 2010, as I could. I was so impressed with just the opening chapter, Finding Your Groove of Greatness. I think I must have read that chapter about 3 times.
Well, I'm glad that it's come across. I wrote this book in unbelievable circumstances for me. I mean, I write fast, but I had to write that book from the beginning of research, outlining, writing, drafting, designing, and producing it, 7 weeks.
Wow.
And I was worried that I'm having to throw this together. There was no time to get in the way of myself, so I was hoping that with all the 15-hour days, with my mother's health rapidly declining, and it was actually the morning after I posted, after a couple 24-hour days, it was the morning after I posted that book for sale at HogueProphecy.com as an ebook. That's when I had to take her to the hospital.
Wow.
And so it was, so actually today is the first day really that I've had a little more normal day. I'm glad that my energies can handle these things in my 54th year. I am receiving letters and comments about the quality of the writing about this book that I have not received since my first book in 1986.
Well,
and I'm flabbergasted because yeah. I was expecting people would be saying, man, this is a real rush job. It doesn't read well, and blah blah blah. But I'm getting daily lots of letters or comments like this.
I see it. I see it on the opposite side, John. To be honest with you, your explanation of the change movements and the alignment of planets, which have cause and effect, it was gripping. I mean, I had to sit back and think about that. And place it in my universal understanding, and it's the universal invisible grip on mankind is amazing, and I think you really captured it.
Well, thank you, Colin. I aim to do that. I'm grateful that I still have so much to learn as a writer, and I will be learning to my end of my days. But I am glad that it came across so well. And I'm, in considering that important point, it is the man of destiny who's everybody's looking to see do something in 2010 is the man who's also afflicted with a presidency that was conceived on the election night and later born on Inauguration Day with Saturn opposed Uranus. And it is the defining challenge point, friction point, for better or worse, for his first term in office. It's going to get some interesting impetus next year. I spoke a little bit about that in the book when the opposition moves into cardinal signs, and specifically when Uranus dabbles for a few months in the summer, from May through August, I think, in the sign of Aries. That's a little taste of what's going to start in 2011 and stay until 2018. That's when you will see a real flush in the great outer collective unconscious into form of the revolutionary times that are the Aquarian Age. I've been saying this since I've been published in 86, that there has been a veil of Piscean Age airy-fairiness that I grew up with, that I read with Montgomery and others, that I kind of bought into a while until I went deeper into the meditation of the future and realized that the Piscean Age mindset that so many New Age writers have used has blinded them or veiled them from seeing how the Aquarian Age is really going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been magnified, strangely enough, since these two oppositions happened in the presidential chart. Uranus was in Pisces. So Uranus, who is the change bringer, the revolter, the revolutionary, was stuck in a sign that was doing revolution, driving a tank forward, looking in the rearview mirror at the Piscean Age.
Yeah.
And that's going to remain at this tug of war, because you now have status quo Saturn limiting change. And this is why, even as we speak, the Congress is still struggling with this tug of war over health care in the United States. They're probably going to go to a vote on Christmas morning.
Right.
I have predicted in the book that I'm pretty certain that this will be passed into law before 2010.
Yeah, I think so.
And although when I made that prediction in October, I was thinking, well, I'm going to be wrong about this.
Yeah.
But I have to trust this thing that when I just put myself out of the way and it says it, I have to honor it and take the rap if it doesn't work.
I read the health insurance reform chapter in Predictions 2010, and I have to say it's chilling, because I believe John McCain said it best recently when he said, it's a paraphrase from memory, but he said something to the effect, somewhere they went off track. It wasn't about the quality of service delivery of healthcare, it was the cost. And that was the issue, not the welfare or social aspect. It was the cost of health care. And then I think he fell back asleep after that. I'm not quite sure, but that seemed to be the only thing that stuck out in my mind. And that is so true. The bill that is going through Congress right now does not at all really adapt to the original problem, which was the cost of health care.
Well, and that is... And that is a repetition in the American karma of a country that has been done so much for, in the name of personal freedom and democracy, who used to have slaves. One of the last modern countries to had to fight a war to end it in this country, a bloody civil war.
Right.
We have again that same hypocrisy rising in our karma as a country over the social significance versus the cost. We're literally seeing a new kind of racism in this country, which I had a whole chapter about it. It's going to start seeing it in 2010. People are going to be on the streets like the civil rights movement in 2011, 2012 about it, where it's no longer your color that keeps you out of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It is your... You can be black, white, yellow, red, but if your bank balance is a certain level, you belong to another race of people now that are the have-nots. Now, I could imagine people in Europe in the 19th century as well as today would say, well, Mr. Hugg, you're talking about class struggle that happened then during the work-labor forces versus the aristocracies and all of that. I know that that's what it looks like, but I'm predicting for your audience and in the book that it's going to take on a racial sense. The people will be looked down as lesser human beings, almost in a racial sense, and this will create the next civil rights struggle in this country. And the other thing, too, is that the karma of America not dealing with its health care is going to... This is the easiest part, getting this bill out. Is, I say in the book, is as tough as it looks now, even though it took 8 presidents to try, is the easy part. Now we're halfway there, and the mountain climb gets very, very steep. And I predict to you that it will be 20 years before Americans really get a humanistic, universal health care that any modern society has. It's going to be a real struggle. Because I say in the book somewhere where this misshapen monster of a bill is going to be passed, and then Frankenstein, the doctor, is going to have to fix it, you know.
Yeah, and I think their method is get anything passed so that we can manipulate it afterwards. They're making deals with the devil just to get the votes to get this thing into law.
I foresee a uprising of sorts, with perhaps even the potential of domestic terrorism and violence committed against the insurance companies and the insurance clientele cartel that actually wrote this bill for the president. One of the miscalculations of President Barack Obama, which I hope he will grow out of and learn to end soon, is that he believes that he can work from the inside to convey and convince the insiders and the people with power to change.
Right.
He is going to find out after 4 difficult years that the people he needs to get around him are the people in the streets, the people of the land. He's going to have to learn what Ronald Reagan already knew, since Obama is the Democratic Ronald Reagan.
Right.
And he will be called that for sure, and there will be a lot of parallels to that. That's why he may get a third term, because actually Ronald Reagan, in his last 2 years, there was a serious movement to rescind the amendment in the Constitution that limited term limits for presidents. It eventually didn't go through because he had some such a bad crisis with the Ollie North thing.
Right.
But before that happened, if that had not happened, it might have very well been a third term for Ronald Reagan. The amendment would have been rescinded because he was such a popular president. He had done so much in most people's minds. But Ronald Reagan knew something that Barack Obama has yet to really grok and understand is when the Congress went against Reagan, Reagan used his Hollywood skills as an actor to convince, and his eloquence, to get the American people behind him. And then they pressured their Congress, which most of the time during his reign was Democratic, not Republican, to do his bidding. And so that's something Barack Obama has not attained. Although I see glimpses of this, what I personally think is an impossible future, but I've had too many of my impossible futures come true that I've written down. So I'm seeing glimpses, especially in Barack Obama's Nobel Peace Prize speech. That's a glimpse of the future great president coming out there. The boldness of him to stand before that August group of peaceniks and explain and argue the right need for right war at times.
Right.
You could see them in the audience looking pretty stunned. Although they were very polite Nordic folk, they were stunned.
Well, I hope you are right, John, regarding Barack Obama. From what I've seen so far, I haven't been too impressed. But so your ebook for Predictions 2010 is available on johnhogprophecy.com. Am I correct?
Well, it's on hogprophecy.com.
Okay.
It's hogueprophecy.com.
Right.
And I also have a blog there that I renew every 3 days, and many other books there. It also would be, I think, interesting for people to read Predictions for 2009, which I'm now selling at half price, because it works as a preamble.
It does set up, yes. It most certainly does set up. And remember, everybody, if you go to the site, hogprophecy.com, you can pick up my favorite book, which is Nostradamus and the Antichrist, codenamed Nabus, which I'm wearing out by reading. Such a great, well-soothed book, John. It continues to read like a detective story. I love it.
Yes, that's every element of that book, even though it was written in the summer of 2008, every element of that book is still quite alive and active in trying to gauge who of the main candidates that are alive today, Barack Obama being one of them, Osama bin Laden, Osama and Osama, Barack and Obama and Osama, and some others that are already recently dead that might actually fulfill the bill even more because of the important prophecy of Nostradamus that states, unlike the other two antichrists, Hitler and Napoleon, the death of this antichrist is the first act in his 27-year war. It is the consequences of his death that creates this climate for his war, not he doesn't die at the end of it, right, like Hitler.
Right. John, it's been an absolute pleasure, but once again, we are out of time as usual. We never have enough time with you, sir.
For a person who is so involved with time, I guess it's great to have time move so
and it certainly does. John, an absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you very much for your time, and you take care of yourself.
Thank you, Colin. Goodbye, everybody.
Blessings on your household, sir.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, caveat emptor.
As we rush about our world, preparing for the family festive gathering, we hope you take a moment to think of those less fortunate than ourselves. Those old coats hanging in the closet which your family have outgrown or never wear. They would be greatly appreciated by those less fortunate. Take time to give this season. Give to the Red Cross or Catholic clothing charities or the Salvation Army. Warm the hearts of those who may be experiencing hard times. Do something of goodwill during this festive season.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. 30 seconds remaining of the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. Bless you all for the Christmas season. We hope all of you stay warm, healthy, and dry. And remember, we'll catch you back here next week with David Baker, the Night Zone psychic medium. In the meantime, in between time, that's it, that's all. Good night now.